Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. After reading about the 21st Century Cures Act, which has passed both houses of Congress, I am left feeling conflicted. Pleased that bipartisan compromise has actually happened, but wondering whether this compromise is going to cause more harm than good in the future. I'm recording this on December 12th. The White House has said Obama will sign the bill tomorrow. In general terms, the law will allow for money to be pumped into biomedical research and speed the approval of new drugs and medical devices. It also includes provisions to improve mental health care and combat opioid abuse. Let's dive right into the three articles we're going to read today, starting with one that lists their idea of the winners and losers from the passage of the Cures Act. This is titled, "The Legislation Sailed Through Both Houses of Congress, But It Had Fierce Opponents." Written by Sheila Kaplan for Stat News and posted on December 9, 2016. Sponsors of the 21st Century Cures Act call it a win-win, a fusion of funds for medical research with new rules that direct the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, to approve drugs and devices with greater urgency. There's also money to help states fight the opioid epidemic and a boost for mental health care. But this is Washington, so even this bipartisan bill, which the House of Representatives approved in a landslide and the Senate passed Wednesday, leaves a trail of winners and losers. Winner, drug companies. More than 1,300 lobbyists roamed the halls of Congress on the Cures Act, and disclosure reports show most of them were working for pharmaceutical companies. Their work has paid off. Among other measures, the legislation calls for the use of data summaries to support the approval of certain drugs for new indications, rather than full clinical trial data. The Cures Act will also allow drug companies to promote off-label uses to insurance companies, allowing them to expand their markets. They did not get everything they asked for, however. Among the provisions that the Democrats beat back was longer market exclusivity for certain drugs. Winner, medical device manufacturers. According to the Advanced Medical Technology Association, which represents 300 medical device companies, the Cures Act builds on FDA's current programs to allow a quicker path for breakthrough medical technologies for patients with life-threatening or irreversibly debilitating diseases or conditions and limited alternatives. Passage of this important legislation is a milestone in improving the innovation ecosystem for medical technology and ensuring the availability of new life-saving, life-enhancing devices and diagnostics for patients, said the group's president, Scott Whitaker. Critics of the measure, such as Public Citizens Health Research Group, say the designation of breakthrough devices is too broad and could lead to clearance of devices that aren't ready for the market. Winner, National Institutes of Health, the NIH. An earlier House version of the legislation called for the NIH to get an $8.75 billion boost in its budget. The final legislation includes just more than half that amount for the agency, $4.8 billion. But with an incoming president who has called the nation's medical research agency terrible, it could have been worse. The landmark legislation provides funding for three signature Obama administration research programs over the next 10 years, the Moonshot Against Cancer, the Brain Initiative, and the Precision Medicine Initiative. Loser, the FDA. The $500 million designated for the FDA is meant to pay for the agency's new responsibilities under the Cures Act. There is virtually nothing in it to improve some of FDA's longtime problems. The Government Accountability Office considers two of the FDA's areas of focus especially high risk, food safety and post-approval oversight of medical products that went through the fast track. There's also no money in the Cures Act for aging deteriorating labs outside of headquarters, which Commissioner Dr. Robert Califf has said pose a serious problem. Winner, real-world evidence. The Cures Act directs the FDA to evaluate the use of real-world evidence for approval of new indications for FDA-approved drugs. Proponents see this as a way to apply useful and timely information learned from observational studies, patient input, anecdotal data, and other research to drug and device approval. Loser, randomized clinical trials. Currently the gold standard for testing drugs and devices for safety, the adoption of real-world evidence standards may indicate that randomized clinical trials will become less important for drug and device approval. Winner, Michael Milken's Faster Cures and a host of patient advocacy groups. Michael Milken, the former junk bond king turned philanthropist, has hosted retreats and receptions from Lake Tahoe, Nevada to New York, putting lawmakers in front of renowned scientists, patient advocates, cabinet secretaries, and biomedical industry chief executives, all with the objective of winning support for medical innovation. His Milken Institute Center, Faster Cures, was integral to developing support for the Cures Bill. Other groups, including the American Cancer Society Action Network and Research America, all supported the Cures Act, although some expressed disappointment with the reduced funding. Losers, consumer advocacy groups. Public Citizens Health Research Group and National Center for Health Research campaigned hard against the Cures Act. Although they were able to make some changes, both organizations believe the Cures Act, as it stands, will endanger public health by weakening FDA standards. Loser, regenerative medicine. Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois, who had a stroke in 2012, introduced the REGROW Act earlier this year to expand treatments for stroke victims and people suffering from Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes. Kirk's legislation, which GOP leaders tried to include in the Cures Act, would have permitted the FDA to approve stem cell treatments conditionally without a large final stage clinical trial that is usually required. But many researchers argued that stem cell therapies are still in the early stages of safety and efficacy and urged Congress to hold off giving FDA such a mandate. The final Cures draft does not allow new regenerative medicine products, which include stem cell therapies, to skip the phase 3 trials, but it does permit FDA to grant them accelerated approval if they can show that surrogate endpoints might indicate the drug works, subject to further study. Winners, Representatives Fred Upton, Republican for Michigan, Diana DeGette, Democrat Colorado, and Tim Murphy, Republican Pennsylvania. For Upton, who must step down in January as chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, passage of the Cures Act has been a near obsession. For more than 3 years, Upton, along with DeGette, has herded patient advocacy groups, the drug and device industry, and even rock star Roger Daltrey to support his cause. The payoff? A 392-26 vote. Upton also got a bonus, more than $1.3 million in donations from healthcare political action committees during the time he was crafting the bill. Murphy, a psychologist, is an unexpected victor. Merely days before the vote, the House leadership attached his mental health legislation to the Cures package. Dr. Maria A. Oquendo, president of the American Psychiatric Association, praised the mental health provisions in the Cures Act and said the law will greatly benefit patients. The legislation includes money to create suicide prevention programs and to improve mental health services for children. It also allocated the $1 billion in state grants for the opioid epidemic and seeks to strengthen laws that require the government and insurers to treat mental illness like other diseases. Congress has finally come together in a bipartisan effort to bring serious mental illness out of the shadows, Murphy said. It is my pledge to the patients and families in crisis that I will never stop fighting to deliver treatment before tragedy for those most in need. Winner Senator Lamar Alexander, Republican Tennessee, Chairman of the Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Since July 2015, when the House passed a draft of the Cures Act and sent it to Alexander's committee, the Tennessee lawmaker has had to overcome enormous opposition from Democrats and Republicans. His GOP colleagues vowed to reject any legislation that cost money, no matter how noble its goal, unless the cash was cut from another program. The Democrats did not view the Cures Act's main purpose, acceleration of FDA's work, as especially noble. Most of them believe the agency already works fast enough, perhaps too fast, and needs to maintain its status as the global regulatory leader in patient protection. So Alexander devised a plan. He chopped the Cures Act into small medical innovation bills, which had committee consensus. These ranged from measures to help NIH hire and retain scientists to developing better ways of managing electronic health records. Then he took the hard stuff to the Senate and House leadership, who crafted the current compromise. Loser, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat, Massachusetts. Warren took to the Senate floor last week to rail against the Cures Act, saying it had been hijacked by the pharmaceutical industry. She said the legislation watered down safety requirements for new drugs and devices, and then, as a trade-off, called for research funding at levels that must be appropriated on an annual basis. "I cannot vote for this bill," Warren said to a largely empty chamber. "I will fight it because I know the difference between compromise and extortion." Warren returned the next day with reinforcements, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois and Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, who agreed that the Cures bill should be stopped, but she could not get major support even in her own party. Winner, Vice President Joe Biden. Since the death of his son, Beau Biden, from brain cancer, the vice president has devoted himself to a cancer moonshot designed to speed cures by compressing 10 years of medical research into 5. The initiative faced an uncertain future under the new administration, but the Cures Act saves it by authorizing $1.8 billion over 5 years to continue the program. Congressional leaders praised Biden for his work on the bill, which the White House supports. Now we have another from Stat News, and this was written on December 1st, 2016 by Reshma Ramachandran and Zachary Berger. The term FDA approved means a lot to those of us working in healthcare and the patients we treat, but if the 21st Century Cures Act becomes law, the House of Representatives approved it Wednesday and the Senate will vote on it next week, this mark of trustworthy stewardship will become a shadow of its former self. Working in medicine and public health in Baltimore, we are witness to patients' distrust of the healthcare system and the numerous barriers they face to quality, affordable care. We rely on the Food and Drug Administration to ensure that the treatments we provide are both safe and effective. Our patients have also placed their trust in this agency through us as their prescribers. For example, in discussing medications to treat chronic pain with a 48-year-old single mother of 5 who works during the day, one of us suggested gabapentin as a treatment option. Although it is a commonly used drug, she had not heard of it. But she was reassured when told that it is FDA approved for this condition. She tried this medication, and it has provided her good pain relief. As members of the National Physicians Alliance, NPA, we have been closely following the 21st Century Cures Act legislation and its potential impact on what FDA approved would mean for new drugs and devices. Our interest in the 21st Century Cures Act emerged from overarching concerns among ourselves and other alliance members that the FDA's mission to protect public health by assuring the safety, efficacy, and security of new treatments was being hijacked by the pharmaceutical and medical device industries. Reviewing the latest version of the bill released the day after Thanksgiving, we are not sanguine. The legislation does include some redeeming features, such as increases in funding for the National Institutes of Health and for addressing mental health and the opioid epidemic. All of this much-needed funding, however, comes at the expense of gutting the only agency we as providers can rely on to tell us if the treatments we are prescribing to our patients will work and won't harm them. The Act, for instance, would pressure the FDA to approve new antibiotics, antifungals, and possibly other drugs through a new and faster pathway called the Limited Population Antibacterial Drug Pathway. Through this expedited pathway, new medicines would be approved and labeled for use in patients with unmet medical needs, even though these drugs had never been tested in these specific patient populations. The Act would also allow for new high-risk medical devices to be approved based on anecdotal case studies or reports in medical journals, rather than having to be held to the gold standard of testing in clinical trials. On top of that, manufacturers would be able to make changes to these high-risk devices without any FDA oversight. Instead, the changes would be monitored by third-party contractors paid by industry. The most recent version of the 21st Century Cures Act has a new addition, prompting the FDA to approve new regenerative therapies based on clinical anecdotes and surrogate endpoints like shrinkage of a tumor instead of clinically relevant outcomes like longer survival or improved quality of life. These provisions would unravel the FDA, turning it from the treatment watchdog it is today into a puppet of the pharmaceutical and medical device industry. If the 21st Century Cures Act is passed as written, clinicians could be given potentially deadly drugs and devices to prescribe to their patients, blessed by this new version of FDA approval. The good parts of the legislation, increased funding for mental health, opioid addiction, and the NIH, are not even guaranteed. Those funds would not be mandatory under the legislation and would be subject to the whim of Congress during appropriations battles each year. This horse trade between protecting the role of the FDA and critical funding has become unequal and instead represents a lose-lose proposition for patients and providers. Despite all of their clinical and scientific knowledge, health professionals need a way to convey to patients that treatments are safe and effective. The imprimatur of the FDA is currently a kind of good housekeeping seal of approval. Weakening the FDA's standards would undermine our trust and leave patients at a loss. Without a strong FDA, who else will let providers and patients know if a treatment will work or is even safe? Pharmaceutical companies? Medical device manufacturers? We don't need hashtag cures now. Instead, we need legislation that will let us all continue to trust the term FDA approved into the 21st century. And we come now to our last article today, written by Liz Sabo for NPR. This was published on December 7th, 2016, titled Mental Health Care Gets a Boost from 21st Century Cures Act. The 21st Century Cures Act that gained congressional approval on Wednesday has been championed as a way to speed up drug development, but it's also the most significant piece of mental health legislation since the 2008 law requiring equal insurance coverage for mental and physical health. The bill includes provisions aimed at fighting the opioid epidemic, strengthens laws mandating parity for mental and physical health care, and includes grants to increase the number of psychologists and psychiatrists who are in short supply across the country. It also would push states to provide early intervention for psychosis, a treatment program that has been hailed as one of the most promising mental health developments in decades. It is time to fix our broken mental health care system, says Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican, Louisiana, a physician whose mental health bill was folded into the 21st Century Cures Act. Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat, Connecticut, who worked with Cassidy on the bill, says he hopes to alleviate the suffering of people with serious mental illness. I'd heard too many devastating stories of people struggling with serious mental illness and addiction whose lives were forever changed because they couldn't get the care they need, Murphy says. I'd seen up close the heartbreak and frustration that families suffered trying to find care for a loved one, care that seemed impossible to find and even harder to pay for. But Representative Frank Pallone, Democrat, New Jersey, says he's concerned that proposed Republican changes to the health care system could undercut any progress made by the bill. Millions of Americans with mental illness could lose coverage if Congress repeals the Affordable Care Act or cuts spending on Medicaid, which pays for about 25% of all mental health care, he says. Many mental health advocates celebrated the bill's passage. Ronald Hundberg, National Director of Policy and Legal Affairs at the National Alliance on Mental Illness, called the bill's mental health provisions necessary and promising. He says he appreciates the bill's focus on preventing the most horrific consequences of untreated mental illness, including homelessness, incarceration, and suicide. The bill generally requires states to use at least 10% of their mental health block grants on early intervention for psychosis, using a model called coordinated specialty care, which provides a team of specialists to provide psychotherapy, medication, education, and support for patients' families, as well as services to help young people stay in school or their jobs. Research from the National Institutes of Health shows that people who receive this kind of care stay in treatment longer, have greater improvement in their symptoms, personal relationships, and quality of life, and are more involved in work or school compared to people who receive standard care. The bill also sets up a $5 million grant program to provide assertive community treatment, one of the most successful strategies for helping people with serious mental illnesses, such as schizophrenia. Like the early intervention program, assertive community treatment is designed to provide a team of professionals that is on call 24 hours a day. The bill also expands a grant program for assisted outpatient treatment, which provides court-ordered care for people with serious mental illness who might otherwise not seek help. Although the bill authorizes these grants, a future Congress would have to approve funding for the programs. The fact that a program has been authorized is no guarantee that it will be funded, Hundberg says. It's a necessary first step. Mental health advocates will lobby for Congress to approve funding for the most critical programs, Hundberg says. While funding treatments for mental illness is expensive, it's more expensive to ignore it, says Representative Eddie Bernice Johnson, Democrat, Texas, who co-sponsored mental health legislation in the House that folded into the 21st Century Cures Act. Other sections of the bill, based on legislation introduced by Senator John Cornyn, Republican, Texas, give communities more flexibility in how they use federal grants. For example, communities could use community policing grants to train law enforcement officers to deal with patients in the midst of a psychiatric crisis. Another provision would require the U.S. Attorney General to create at least one drug and mental health court pilot program, which would aim to help people with mental illness or drug addiction receive treatment rather than jail time after committing minor offenses. The legislation will help those suffering from mental illness in the criminal justice system can begin to recover and get the help they need instead of just getting sicker and sicker, Cornyn says. This bill also encourages the creation of crisis intervention teams so that our law enforcement officers and first responders can know how to de-escalate dangerous confrontations. This is about finding ways to help the mentally ill individual get help while keeping the community safe at the same time. The mental health provisions have been scaled back significantly since they were first introduced. An earlier version of a bill introduced in the House of Representatives would have changed a federal privacy law to allow doctors under certain circumstances to share mentally ill adults' medical information with their family caregivers. Doctors today often shut families out of their loved ones' care, refusing to share even basic information, such as appointment times, for fear of violating the HIPAA Act. Many health professionals misunderstood HIPAA, refusing to listen to the families of patients who are too disabled by psychosis to provide key details of their medical history, says Representative Tim Murphy, Republican, Pennsylvania, who first introduced the House bill in 2013 in response to the shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Some advocates for the disabled objected to that change, however, arguing that patient privacy is essential and that people might avoid care if they believe their doctors might disclose confidential information. The legislation instructs the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services to clarify when doctors can share patients' medical information with family caregivers, as well as educate healthcare providers about what the law actually says. It's a step in the right direction, Hundberg says. There is so much misinformation about HIPAA. It's one of the most mischaracterized laws out there. The bill also aims to better coordinate mental health care. Although 8 federal agencies today fund 112 programs that provide mental health care, these agencies rarely coordinate their efforts to make sure patients get the help they need and to avoid duplicating services, says Tim Murphy. The bill would make structural changes to the way federal agencies provide mental health services. A new committee would link leaders of key agencies involved in mental health care, such as the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Department of Justice, and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA. A new position, the Assistant Secretary for Mental Health and Substance Use, would oversee SAMHSA and promote the most successful approaches to treating mental illness. An advisory board, the National Mental Health and Substance Use Policy Laboratory, would analyze treatments and services to help decide which ones should be expanded. Chris Murphy said he wishes the final bill had included more resources for outpatient mental health care, as well as for inpatient hospital bills for people in psychiatric crisis. He also said the current bill provides a starting point, but that he hopes Congress will continue working to improve mental health care in its next session. This doesn't solve all the problems in the mental health system, says Chris Murphy, noting that Congress may still need to change the HIPAA law to allow families to better care for people with mental illness. We may still have to look at this down the line. And that one came from NPR. Those are the articles that we had today on the 21st Century Cures Act, which, as is expected when you are hearing this, to have been signed into law by President Obama. I will be personally interested to see whether the funding does come through Congress for the things like the mental health care, the opioid abuse funding, and others that may have been passed, but are going to have to be funded year after year. Thank you for tuning into Sound Body today. Stay well and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.